This is VOA News. Reporting by remote, I'm David Byrd. The U.S. Senate has started considering a $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill after Democrats made late changes in hopes of getting it through a narrowly divided chamber. AP's Sagar Magani reports.
The Senate split 50-50 over whether to even start debating the bill.
The vice president votes in the affirmative,
with Vice President Harris breaking the tie in her role as Senate president, underscoring that Democrats have virtually no margin for error in trying to achieve President Biden's top legislative priority. Republicans argue the bill's too big, with too much money for non-virus-related provisions.
The table of contents for this act is as follows.
And before letting the debate start, they demanded Senate clerks read the entire bill aloud.
Section 9819.
It's more than 600 pages long. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Small tsunami waves triggered by a series of powerful earthquakes hit the east coast of New Zealand's North Island Friday. Authorities said thousands of residents who had evacuated to higher ground could now return to their homes. Officials had warned that the waves could reach 3 meters above high tide levels after the quakes, the strongest one a magnitude 8.1. But the largest waves have now passed, according to the National Emergency Management Agency, and it has downgraded the threat level. Earlier on Friday, workers, students, and residents in areas like Northland and Bay of Plenty on the northern coast near Auckland were put on alert after 3 quakes in less than 8 hours triggered tsunami sirens and warnings. A decade ago, a magnitude 6.3 quake killed 185 people in the South Island city of Christchurch. You can find more on our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Protesters hit the streets again in Myanmar on Thursday in Yangon and Mandalay, as well as other towns that have been hot spots for unrest. AP's Karen Chamas has details.
Crowds gathered in Yangon, Myanmar's largest city, chanting against the recent coup and violence that has killed many protesters so far. Despite the shocking violence the day before, demonstrators across the country were again met with tear gas. Footage from the protests of Myanmar's bloodiest day so far showed security forces shooting a person at point-blank range and chasing down and savagely beating demonstrators. The United States called the images appalling. The UN Human Rights Chief said it was time to end the military stranglehold over democracy in Myanmar. I'm Karen Chamas.
The number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits edged higher again last week, AP's Ben Thomas reports.
The Labor Department reports 745,000 people filed initial claims for jobless aid, an increase of 9,000 from the previous week. It's a sign many employers continue to cut jobs, despite evidence that the overall economy is improving. All told, 4.3 million Americans are receiving traditional state unemployment benefits, and when you factor in supplemental federal unemployment programs set up to soften the economic blow of the coronavirus pandemic, an estimated 18 million people are collecting some form of jobless aid. The nation still has nearly 10 million fewer jobs than it did in February of last year. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Israel, Denmark, and Austria agreed on Thursday to join forces in the fight against COVID-19 with an investment in research and rollout of vaccines to protect people against new surges and mutations of the virus. The effort is aimed at getting ahead of another expected surge of COVID-19 and the uncertainty of how long inoculations will remain effective. President Joe Biden on Thursday congratulated the NASA team responsible for last month's successful landing of an unmanned rover on Mars. Speaking in a video conference call with the leadership of the space agency's Jet Propulsion Laboratory team, the president expressed awe at the mission's achievement.
It's astounding what you did. You should not underestimate it. You should not underestimate it. You know, you did it the most American way. You believed in science, you believed in hard work, and you believed there wasn't a darn thing you couldn't do if you put your minds together.
The NASA rover traveled nearly 483 million kilometers in 7 months as part of an ongoing quest to study whether there was once life on the red planet. Be sure to log on to our website, voanews.com. Reporting by remote, I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ghana's Supreme Court confirms President Nana Akufo-Addo's re-election.
What we, the lawyers for President Akufo-Addo and President Akufo-Addo himself, as well as all Ghanaians knew, is that President Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo won the presidential election without a shred of doubt.
Ivorians are voting in legislative elections tomorrow, Saturday. Kenya women's rights activists welcome President Joe Biden's revocation of a ban on U.S. funding to women's health organizations. And Ugandan authorities release a list of missing persons.
We are not content. We are still demanding for answers. Let these people tell us where the missing persons are. If they are dead, let them produce the dead bodies such that the families get to know, and they bury their loved ones.
And dispelling apprehensions about COVID-19 vaccines in West Africa. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ghana's Supreme Court has confirmed the re-election of President Nana Akufo-Addo. In a ruling yesterday, Thursday, the court said that former President John Dramani Mahama, who petitioned the court to overturn the election, did not prove that the errors he said were made by Electoral Commission Chair Jane Adukwade Mesa affected the outcome of the vote. Former President Mahama said late Thursday that while he disagrees with the court ruling, he was legally bound by it. Fatimatu Abubakar is the lawyer and spokesperson for President Akufo-Addo. She says the Supreme Court decision reaffirms what President Akufo-Addo and the country knew all along, that there was not a shred of evidence in former President Mahama's petition.
What we, the lawyers for President Akufo-Addo and President Akufo-Addo himself, as well as all Ghanaians knew, is that we were convinced without any reasonable doubt that President Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo won the presidential election, which was conducted on 7 December 2020, without a shred of doubt. But the moment a petition was filed to challenge, not necessarily the validity, but the declaration, it was proper that the president will subject himself to the rule of law so that the apex court of Ghana will come out with a judgment that will subsequently sustain the peace that we have in the country. And today, the ruling or the judgment of the court as delivered this afternoon by the Chief Justice of the Republic of Ghana, His Lordship Justice Emi Yeboa, reflects what all Ghanaians already knew.
The election was very close. How does the president move forward with Ghana? Is he going to bring in the opposition leader, the former president, Mr. Mahama?
You know, if you look at our recent history as a country, I would say that even if you want to check from the year 2008 or under the Fourth Republic, all our presidential elections have been closely contested by the incumbent New Patriotic Party, which is my party, and the opposition NDC. So our expectations were high, but what we got was fairly good. And we are confident that if we get the opportunity to serve, as Ghanaians have given this government, even in the face of COVID, the president will do his best to turn the economy of the country around and make sure Ghana takes its rightful place in terms of prosperity and economic development in the world.
Madam, if you look around West Africa, elections that were held last year and even this year, many of them ended up in violence. What lessons do you think other West African countries can draw from the Ghanaian democratic process?
First of all, what I will tell my brothers and sisters across the continent, and indeed around the world, is that when we chose democracy, we chose dialogue over violence. Violence is non-characteristic of a democracy. And if we intend to let the majority decision thrive and let the majority rule and respect the basic principles of democracy, we ought to know that when things don't go our way, we cannot take the laws into our own hands and go and cause mayhem or be chaotic or try to disturb the peace of our respective countries. The continent is growing. The continent is so promising and is making the best efforts to thrive. But if at every opportunity that we disagree with each other, we will use our hands to tear down what we have fought so hard to build on the continent. Then we will not go anywhere. We should build institutions like the court system, civil society, other stakeholders who make our democracy thrive and make sure in times of disagreement or in times that we are not satisfied with certain things, we would allow the laid down legal framework and other frameworks that have worked around the world also work for us.
Madam, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fatimatu Abubakar is the lawyer and spokesperson for Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo. She was speaking with us from the capital, Accra. The people of Ivory Coast are voting tomorrow, Saturday, in legislative elections between the ruling RHDP of President Alassane Ouattara and a united but not so united opposition platforms consisting of Henry Konan-Bédié's PDCI, Jean Soro's GPS, former President Laurent Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party, and Charles Blaye Goudé's COJEP. A total of 1,266 candidates are competing for just 255 seats. Journalist Felix Boni is in the Ivory capital, Abidjan.
The campaign has finished this first day, and we noticed that this campaign took place very calmly without violence, and we hope that the election will equally be peaceful after the difficult election we had 6 months ago for the election of the president.
How many seats are being contested, and how many candidates altogether?
A lot of candidates are together. For instance, we have no less than hundreds of candidates together, and the ruling party has candidates in all the areas, all the constituencies. They have 254 candidates in all the country. You know that we have 255 seats at our assembly. It means that it is in only one area they have any candidates. PDCI, for instance, has 144 candidates. ADS of Mr. Gbagbo has 103 candidates. FPI of Mr. Afingeson has 84 candidates. And we have also PDPCI of Mr. Mabutu Apes, 27 candidates also. And for the world, we have 1,511 candidates for just 255 seats.
Felix, which of the political parties do you think is going into tomorrow's election with momentum? Because I noticed coming into the election, the opposition parties were divided. So who has the momentum?
Yes, the opposition is going divided after this election. It's a real damage for this opposition. But I can say that on both sides, each one of these ruling party and opposition has its strengths and weakness. We must not forget about the independence candidate. We have no less than 800 independent candidates at this election who could also influence this vote.
I read a piece in the local media about the women were complaining about lack of adequate representation. How well do you think the women are represented?
Nobody can oblige women to come and decide to be candidate at the election. The law said that each party must have 30% of women as candidate. But if the Dutch does not find 30% of women candidate, how can they do? It is a problem of the women. Women must try to promote themselves in political parties in order to have capacity to be candidate to the election. A party cannot present a woman who have not the capacity to win at the election. It is not because we need women that we have to take any woman to choose her like candidate and lose the seats. This is a problem of women themselves, not for a problem inside the political parties.
Felix, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you always.
Thank you, too.
That was journalist Felix Boni speaking with us from the Ivorian capital, Abidjan. The Ugandan government has released a list of people that it has detained at various detention facilities across the country. The list of 177 people was released on Thursday by JJ Odongo, Uganda's internal affairs minister. However, officials of the opposition, the National Unity Platform, NUP, of Bobby Wine, say hundreds more are still missing on the list. NUP spokesperson Joe Senyonyi says most of those on the list are opposition supporters, that the government should reveal the whereabouts of several more. Mugumi Davis Rakarinji reports from Kampala.
Internal Affairs Minister JJ Odongo read out the list of missing individuals, the members of parliament, Thursday afternoon. He said they were arrested for different alleged crimes, including illegal demonstration, possessing military equipment, and planning post-election violence. Odongo said some have been prosecuted, while others will be prosecuted, including in military courts. Minister Odongo said the government would not hesitate to arrest more people suspected of committing crimes.
Arrests will continue in as far as there is reason to do so. Because to say no arrest, supposing there is a thief tomorrow, and then because we have said there will be no arrest, then we don't arrest the thief.
Parliamentarian Theodore Sechikubo of the ruling National Resistance Movement, or NRM, also condemned what he called rampant kidnappings and arrests that he said have occurred in the aftermath of the contested presidential elections.
There's no way you can defend a political difference to degenerate into court martials of the civilians, whom you know that civilians are tried in civil courts. On this matter of the abducted people, abducted persons in this country, there is no way I can stand and defend you. This is a very bleeding stigmata. You've not allowed the wounds of politics to heal.
This week, the National Unity Platform released a list of 243 supporters that it says were kidnapped by security agents. National Unity Platform spokesperson George Senyon said it is wrong for the government to persecute its political opponents. He says he does not entirely agree with the minister's list because it includes only those from Kampala.
Clearly, this list leaves a lot to be desired. We are not content. We are still demanding for answers. Let these people tell us where the missing persons are. If they are dead, let them produce the dead bodies such that the families get to know, and they bury their dead loved ones.
There have been conflicting messages from government and security officials, with some denying the arrest and detention of missing persons. But last month, President Museveni acknowledged that some people had been detained by the government, and he tasked the security agencies to come out with the list. Miriam Atembe, a human rights activist, says she's disturbed by the continued arbitrary detention of people opposed to the ruling party.
Me, I'm about to go mad. Is this what Ugandans should accept? That thousands of Ugandans, because they are in opposition during the electoral process, they opposed the government, they should be arrested, they should be tortured, some of them are killed, some of them are wounded, and some of them are being thrown into the bush. Is that right?
A number of MPs say there should be a commission of inquiry about missing persons. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 5th. Women's rights activists in Kenya have welcomed U.S. President Joe Biden's order revoking the ban blocking U.S. funding to women's health organizations that provide abortion or abortion-related services. Critics say the so-called gag rule left women uninformed about safe options to end a pregnancy. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
45-year-old Najma Wangoi lost her sister in 2018 after she bought medicine from a drugstore to induce an abortion, and it led to her death. The mother of two says her sister didn't know there was a better way to undergo an abortion. She didn't know because she bought those medicines for 3,500 shillings. If she knew there was a better place to do a safe abortion, she would still be alive. Wangoi says she'll have explained her situation to the hospital and she'll have been treated. Under the global gag rule originally enacted by U.S. President Ronald Reagan and revived by President Donald Trump, it became difficult for millions of women to seek abortion services at health centers receiving U.S. funds. The gag rule blocked U.S. government funding for organizations if they provided abortion services, counseling or referrals. The rule effectively shut down health clinics, as well as community sensitization programs about sexual and reproductive health. Bonfas Ushie, researcher with the African Population and Health Research Center, says while the ban has now been lifted by U.S. President Joe Biden, it will not be enough to undo the effects it had on women's health in Africa.
Lifting it is great, But it's going to take a while for the impact of the global gag rule as instituted by Trump to begin to live. So it's going to require a lot of funding. It's going to require a lot of programs to undo what has been done over the past 4 years.
33-year-old Rose Accord said she's lucky to be alive after taking tablets to abort a baby in 2019. After 3 days of pain, the fetus emerged, but the placenta got stuck in her womb, requiring urgent medical attention. I have a health problem now since I did the abortion because it did not come out well. Accord says, these days my menstruation goes for a month and there's nothing I'm using like family planning. My menstrual period goes on non-stop, she says. Akoth, Wangoi, and others hope that with the gag rule lifted, more women can be saved from abortion-related deaths and health crises. Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
As COVID-19 vaccines begin to roll out in West Africa this week, healthcare officials are working to fight misinformation among some pockets of the communities where people are reluctant to take the vaccine. Valerie Chanfro is a mental health specialist who has worked closely with communities in West Africa for the Alliance for International Medical Action, also known as ALIMA. She explains to Ricky Stryak the importance of government health officials to work closely with community medical healers.
In lots of country and in West Africa, we know that there is lots of information need to why, when, what the purpose of vaccine. So when we had some global rougeole vaccination, for example, there is some people who are very worried about this new vaccine.
In West Africa especially, where the first wave at least wasn't quite as harsh, coupled with the fact that the bureaucracy on this vaccine was sped up, so it came to the market quite fast. Is this a uniquely challenging position?
I believe there is a link between the 2 points, because the first wave was not huge, but in reality, we don't have exactly the number of cases. There is lots of information maybe we don't have, or we are not sure to have that. So, but the communication was that in March the last year, it was more occidental. Quick production of that vaccine is one of the signs that it's so huge in the entire world that all the research make lots of effort to find a solution. I think the two things are linked, but I think there is a lot of people who agree to take the vaccine in West Africa. Most of the time we focus on some little resistance that exists, and we don't talk about all the good perception and the lots of family who wants to have this vaccine.
I was in southern Senegal last week, and there was a march of women traditional healers against the vaccine. And these people are very influential in their communities. One woman said to me, I'm not against the vaccine, but we don't have enough information. And I guess my question is what do governments need to be doing in order to work with these often traditional healers in rural areas, and not just during pandemics, but all of the time?
That's important. The strategy that we want to use ALIMA when we are working with community, but I think it's a global strategy in public health. The first is communication, discussion, information, and talking group. Find a mapping, to make a mapping with what is a traditional circuit of health. What is the way that people are looking for treatment? Midwife, traditional birth attendant, traditional healers, etc. They're the leaders. But the message, we don't have to give them our message, but we have to build the message with them.
That was Valerie Chanfro, a mental health specialist who has worked closely with communities in West Africa for the Alliance for International Medical Action. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from France. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very, very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the 2021 Africa Under 20 Cup of Nations, currently being hosted by Mauritania. Finalists for the tournament have emerged as three-time champions. Ghana is set to take on Uganda on Saturday. Uganda is appearing in the Under 20 finals for the very first time. Former champions Ghana beat Gambia by a solitary goal in the first semi-final at the Stade Olympique in the capital, Nouakchott, on Monday. The game was a rematch of the final Group C match between the two sides earlier in the tournament, which the Gambia won 2-1. The second semi-final proved to be more entertaining as double-ton Uganda thumped Tunisia 4-1 at the same venue. Uganda hippo forward Richard Basangwa is looking forward to Saturday's final.
I'm working very hard for the final game on Saturday so that we can win the trophy. As a team, we're really prepared. We're working very hard. We don't have any injuries. The team is physically, mentally, and spiritually fit, which shows us that we are capable of winning the trophy on Saturday.
Away from the Africa Under 20 finals, John McKinstry has been suspended as Ugandan Cranes national head coach less than 2 years after taking the job from Frenchman Sebastien Desabre. In a short statement, FUFA asked the Northern Irishman to step aside just a few weeks before the national team resumed the African Cup of Nations qualifiers with a home tie against Group B leaders Burkina Faso. Assistant coaches Mubiru Abdullah, Mbambazi Livingstone, and goalkeeping coach Kajoba Fred will take charge of the team during this period. The rest of the technical team remains unchanged. Ahmed Hussein is the Director of Communication for the Federation of Uganda Football Association.
At the moment, we are looking at activities for the next 1 month. So with Mr. McKinstry aside and his assistants taking charge, I'm sure they also want to deliver.
And to South Africa, where South African Football Association Chief Executive Officer Tibogo Motlanthe has shut down any suggestion of fans returning to Premier League soccer actions anytime soon. SAFA are adopting a wait-and-see approach before putting into place structures for the return of fans to stadiums. The South African football governing body is yet to even request the return of fans and will not set a timeline for an end to the behind-closed-doors era. SAFA are cautious due in part to the opinions of health experts who have warned of the possibility of a third wave of infections. The Confederation of African Football has opened the bidding process for the country that will host the inaugural Total CAF Women's Champions League 2021. The Total CAF Women's Champions League 2021 competition will be organized during the period of October, November or December each year as by resolution of the CAF Executive Committee. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, March 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndumbulo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.